text archives and beyond. I'm sure that many of you have had opportunities to create thesauri and other controlled vocabulary systems over the years. And what we have today is a group of people from Access Innovations, Factiva, and LexisNexis to talk to us about how they create controlled vocabulary systems for at their companies. Traditionally, when people think about indexing and taxonomies, they think about search and retrieval. And this certainly is a key benefit of indexing data and one that our panel is going to discuss. But looking beyond search, we are also going to see how indexing can drive feature functionality, whether it's in products like Nexus or Factiva, or perhaps on a newspaper's website where maybe they're pushing content to particular topical nodes on their website, being driven by controlled vocabularies. So our panel today consists of these three folks, and I'm going to introduce them at the beginning, and they each have a presentation, and then at the end we hope to open and get some discussion going here. But first, we're going to start off with Teresa McGregor. Teresa is a taxonomy product consultant from the product development division of LexisNexis. She has her MLS, and she's worked at LexisNexis for 12 years, much of that time dedicated to the Smart Indexing Technology Program. On the indexing team, Teresa's played a variety of roles from indexer to trainer to manager, including initiating the multi-language indexing project in the LexisNexis UK office. As such, she has an intimate knowledge of taxonomy development, automated classification, and issues surrounding search and retrieval. Teresa's recent activities focus on providing taxonomy consulting to customers utilizing smart indexing technology on internal content. And then we have Alice Redmond-Neal from Access Innovations. She is the in-house specialist in thesaurus construction and knowledge-based development for Access Innovations. Her work in psychology, linguistics, and communications disorders, with feedback, transferred well to the field of information sciences. Alice has created numerous thesauri on topics ranging from general information to highly technical subject matter. As Access Innovations Training Director, Alice is responsible for coaching clients in the use of Data Harmony software. A member of the Rio Grande chapter of SLA, she has written on thesaurus construction and categorization and has presented workshops and lectures at several conferences. And then we also have Teresa Harrison, who has been with Factiva for 12 years, 5 years with Dow Jones, and 7 years since the inception of the Factiva joint venture. During this time, Teresa has held a number of positions around the world with Factiva, including being a member of the sales organization, holding a leadership position with Factiva Consulting Services, and was Factiva's knowledge manager, responsible for implementing a KM program company-wide. More recently, Teresa works with Factiva's government teams in Washington, D.C. and London, England, working with clients as well as division strategy. And Teresa holds her MBA from New York University's Stern School of Business. And with that, I will pass it over to Teresa McGregor.
Thank you, Jen, and thanks everybody for sticking around. Appreciate that. What I want to do in the next few minutes is just give you the LexisNexis perspective on indexing and taxonomies. And I'll tell you that we don't have the screen in front of us on the laptop, so if I keep turning my head, I'm trying just to remember what I've got up there. What I want to do is just talk a bit about the history of indexing at LexisNexis, kind of the timeline of development, where we are today as far as what we cover, how we got there, so developing the taxonomy, and then how we get from developing those taxonomies to actually tagging documents, so the development of our index terms. And there's just a little bit about the future, kind of where we are with new products and what kind of what our plans will be in the next maybe 3 to 5 years. Indexing, and by indexing I mean automated classification, started at LexisNexis in the early 90s. We had computational linguists in-house who kind of developed the theory behind indexing, which was a rule-based system based on frequency and weighting of vocabulary, working with our software engineers to develop the application behind the scenes, the software to actually apply that and work it into the LexisNexis fabrication workflow. And the first type of indexing that was released was company indexing, so proper name indexing. In moving to the mid-90s, we extended the coverage to include geographic indexing and topical or subject and industry indexing. And over this time, we really expanded the team to include librarians, subject specialists, lawyers, to really start building the rules behind each of those indexing types. In the late 90s was when indexing really first came to the fore as far as the user interface. So it had been in the product and available for searchers to use, but in the Nexus.com interface was really when we started to see features like browsable directories and thesaurus tools that surfaced the indexing a lot more. In the early part of this century was when we started extending indexing beyond English. So we built indexing in German and French, and as Jen mentioned, what we did there is not try any kind of translation, but actually hire native-speaking indexers in our European offices to build rule sets for the indexing in the exact same way we've done in English, so building it from scratch, because the way our rules work, and you'll see in a few minutes how that vocabulary looks, it is very idiomatic, so you can't just translate. You absolutely have to have someone doing that research and building those rules in each language. Last year, we introduced a program called Taxonomy Solutions, which is taking the indexing, the taxonomies, the rule sets, and the software that we've built and use internally and actually allowing customers to use that same technology on their own internal content. And then earlier this year, we introduced a new web platform, the new Nexus. It's both a new platform and a new interface, and it offers a lot more indexing-driven functionality. And I'll show you a few screenshots toward the end of the presentation. So where we stand today for news and business control vocabularies, we have more than 330,000 companies, and that's U.S. and international, public and private, more than 3,500 industry and subject categories. So really that's both broad coverage and granular coverage, and I'll show you some examples later. For geographic locations, it's 900 places, everything from continents, major world regions, down to all countries worldwide, country subdivisions, and major cities. And again, as I said, that's available in English, both with U.S. and U.K. variants, and German and French. For our legal content, we have control vocabularies for both the U.S. and U.K. kind of legal systems. In the U.S., we recently extended that taxonomy, and it covers 16,000 nodes. So it is very detailed for our legal users. In the U.K., it's about a 400-node taxonomy, and they'll be expanding that over the next few years. And finally, we do build specialized and custom vocabularies, both internally, so when someone from our product or market groups wants to build a new product that focuses on, say, an insurance industry or HR, they'll come to us and we can either extend our existing taxonomy or build an entirely new taxonomy just for that product, and also based on customer requests, and especially as in regards to the taxonomy solutions where we're offering the kind of the technology to customers, we're also offering consulting and customization. Taxonomy development. So the taxonomies are fairly stable right now, but to get to that point, again, was collaboration between the teams in the U.S. and our European teams. And it was a traditional library research topic, which is we did our research, we looked at standards, incorporated standards where possible, talked a lot with customers, a lot with subject specialists, how do they organize their own domains, how do they want to search for information. Lots of debate over language issues to make sure that the terms really were parallel across languages. And to that end, we have 28 top-level industry categories. And that roughly parallels all of the major industrial classification schemes, SIC, NAICS, the North American schemes, international schemes like ISIC and NACE, the European Community Scheme, and other kind of national schemes. And we do map the industry terms to those classification codes. So in our thesaurus, you can type in a NAICS code, and it will point you to the control vocabulary term in Smart Indexing. For subjects, it's 17 top-level categories, complementary to industry. It's where you find company activities and trade and labor terms. Also, non-industry terms like crime, government, social issues, population, etc. Both industry and subject, as I mentioned, are very granular, down to as many as 6 levels deep of relationships, and they are polyhierarchical, so terms can appear in multiple places in the taxonomies, wherever there's a true parent-child relationship. Makes it a lot easier for browsing and navigation. So these are the top levels of the industry taxonomy. Again, if you're familiar with NAICS or SIC, they're obvious: banking, energy, manufacturing. And each of these top level categories has, you know, hundreds of terms underneath, again, down to six levels of granularity. And the subject topics, again, with many, many terms underneath, government and law also there. So that's developing the taxonomies, and then the kind of the real hard work is getting those taxonomies applied to documents. And I mentioned earlier that we use a rule-based automated classification scheme, and it has to be automated because we're receiving thousands of documents every day from publishers, and we need to get those documents online with as little lag time as possible. So it has to be a very efficient, a very quick process. At the same time, we're all librarians, so we know that classification is an intellectual exercise. You have to have brains in the mix. So what we do is, before we actually index any documents, indexers, mostly librarians, as I said, some subject specialists, lawyers, build rule sets for each of the index terms. And a rule set includes the vocabulary that you would find in a document that would indicate to you when you were reading it, is it about a particular topic? Is this about interest rates? Is this about mergers and acquisitions? Is this about chicken farming? You know that because it has certain language. So they do research kind of pulling out the language and weighing the language. So looking for both synonymous or very strong references to the topic, but also weaker, more ambiguous references that frequently co-occur with that particular topic. But plug that into the rule set, and the rule then looks for things like where a particular word or phrase occurs. Was it the first word or the 101st word or the 201st word? In a news document, was it in the headline or the lead paragraph or the body? That all goes into the calculation. Obviously, looking for frequency of occurrence, so how often a particular word or phrase reoccurs in a document, and co-occurrence or variety, which is combinations of different words and phrases, especially combinations from different weighted sets. So the indexers do this research, find this vocabulary, plug it into the rule set, and then they'll do a battery of tests against all the different kinds of content that we index, which is news information, newspapers, magazines, industry publications, transcripts, SEC filings, company profiles, legislative materials. Test against all of that, go back, add language, remove language, change the weights in the rules until they reach acceptable levels of recall and precision. Then they put that rule into our production environment, in which case, as documents are fed to us from publishers, they're matched against the rule sets, index terms are tagged on the documents, and they're made available for searching. I see wires. Yeah. and one of the other side benefits of one of the other side benefits of automated classification is that because it is so fast, because it is so efficient, we're able to regularly re-index the archive, which is, you know, billions of documents for LexisNexis. But what that means is, as we add new terms or as we make changes to the rule sets, it's kept fresh and up to date in all of the content, as well as something that comes into us tomorrow or next week. I'll give you kind of an example of what the indexers do when they receive a topic to create a rule for. So let's say we want to write a rule for executive moves. First thing, we'll come up with a scope note. This case, a fairly obvious one, targets the hiring, promotion, and appointment to executive level positions. And when we work on scope notes, really what we're trying to do is kind of set a box in which the indexer will work to discover that language. We also work with, again, the German and the French and our UK teams to make sure that the scopes, again, are parallel across those different cultures, across those different markets. Once the term and the scope have been set, then the indexer goes out and does research, looking at hundreds and hundreds of documents on LexisNexis. They'll also go to the web, they'll go to other sources, again, just kind of culling the language. And you'll see some of the things here. For something like executive moves, they're going to look at strong, kind of long, strong phrases like announces new CEO, announces new CFO, announces new vice president, appointed vice president. All of that language that, if it appears in a document, it's going to be about executive moves. But they'll also look for things, again, kind of going down that chain of weight or ambiguity, So you sort of have the strong terms at the top and the weaker terms at the bottom. So will head the company, probably good, but obviously some ambiguity there. Promoted to the position as senior VP. And then just the very ambiguous single words and phrases, all the kind of verb forms for hiring, resigning, retiring, appointing, and the different ways of saying executive, the acronyms, et cetera. Now, obviously, this is just an excerpt. An actual rule set can have anywhere between 200 and 700 lines of vocabulary like this. So probably the average is about 500. And it really just depends on the ambiguity, the looseness of the language around a particular topic. So that then goes into a rule set. Again, it's tested. And when we put it into production, we'll see that it will index a document. So in this case, a managed care law weekly. Hot topic. I have that one by my bedside every night. But Linda Moore is named Chief Compliance Officer. And you can see we index it for executive moves as well as for several other relevant topics. The idea being now the user, the customer, doesn't have to think of, okay, what are all the ways to find executive moves? One click, they can search on this topic, and we've done all that work behind the scenes for them. So again, kind of that's really the overview of how we do it and what we've done. What's new, as I mentioned, Taxonomy Solutions, which is taking all this work that we've done over the last decade, making it available for customers to use on their own content, because we've had a lot of customers saying, wow, we really like using indexing on your product. We've got this whole mass of documents that we're trying to index internally. You know, can you help us? Can we borrow what you've done and use it on our own information? So that's new for us and really kind of exciting for indexing to be going outside of its usual realm, at least our smart indexing. And then the new Nexus has taken advantage of indexing and really exploited and surfaced indexing both in search creation, search development, and also in answer set navigation, answer set analysis, and kind of search expansion. And I'll just show you a few quick screenshots there. Over here on the left-hand side of the screen, we have the Easy Search form, which is a new search, again, for novice users, people who aren't familiar with Boolean, prefer kind of a web search. And what we offer there is ability for them to enter a couple of free text terms and then drop-down lists of the top-level industries, major subject terms, and regions. So, again, as easy as possible for end users to just click and launch a very complex search behind the scenes. But for them, it was very easy. In Power Search, more for advanced users, we've improved the index lookup tool or the thesaurus tool. Much easier to search for terms, much easier to browse within the hierarchies. Again, the hierarchies now show the full six levels of relationships. They all have kind of the checkbox, easy to add them to your search. You can view scope notes. You can view company hierarchies, corporate family structures, and build those into your search. Within the answer set, whether you got to the answer set through an indexing search, a free text search, a forum search, it really doesn't matter. But once you get that answer set, we'll show the indexing within that set, so kind of categorize that set by subject, by industry, also by publication name, publication type, again, helping users to navigate their answers. So instead of just having to go headline by headline, document by document, you can view, in this case, we're viewing all the industries associated with a particular set. Makes it a lot easier to maneuver within that set and pinpoint your documents. And then finally, on the face of each document, we've made the indexing much easier to view. It's in this nice little box here, but also it's actionable. That's a nice product development term. You have to make it actionable. And what that means is they all have checkboxes, so much easier to, again, select terms and either narrow the existing search or launch a new search based off the indexing, which is something that we all do naturally. You run a search, and then you go, okay, what were the terms? Write them down, copy, paste, launch a new search. Now, click, and you can do that. And it'd be easier for us and easier for end users. And, again, they don't have to even know what's going on behind the scenes. They can just see the terms that they want and launch a new search. What's next for us? I think definitely more of a focus on customization. As I said, the taxonomies themselves are fairly stable. We're always adding new terms to fill in gaps, again, kind of take those categories down to the sixth level. But really, I think what we're looking at are both internally and from customers, feedback as far as how we can make those those taxonomies fit specific market groups, and as far as taxonomy solutions and selling taxonomies, licensing them, is creating tools so that customers can create their own rules, so that they can add localization, regionalization to the existing taxonomies. And then finally, I think, a focus more on linking the taxonomies. We have these great companies, industries, subjects, geographic locations, but how can we add more kind of interrelationships between them, and especially, you know, applied all this indexing, all this metadata to our content, so we know a heck of a lot about our content, and our content can tell us more about our taxonomies, and kind of working with our R&D groups to figure out how can we surface that as knowledge, as information, as opposed to just using indexing to run a search or review results. Can we surface information out of the content itself based on linkages between the indexing? And I think that's really what's up next for us. And that is indexing in a nutshell. Thank you very much. And do I pass it on to you?
Number two on the list. I'm really not used to looking at this blank screen here.
Sort of disconcerting.
Yeah. I hope that we're all on the same page. A little survey. How many of you coming in knew of LexisNexis? How many of you knew of Factiva? How many of you know of Access Innovations? All right. Remember when 7-Up had their promotional campaign where they claimed to be the un-cola? Well, we're kind of the un-whatever you choose to fill in. We're in a little bit of a different arena, but I am glad to be able to share knowledge with you and help you understand what we're about. I attended your session the other day where you had results of a survey taken, and I was certainly impressed, kind of stunned to realize how much downsizing there is going on in your newsrooms, in the services that you're able to provide to the news services and so on. And you know, clearly you need to make the best use of whatever is left of you that you can. So this is one more option to consider for that. Yes, it does go on. So I want to start by explaining a little bit about the company and our approach to the work that we do with taxonomies and indexing, and then I'll get around to telling you a little bit about news indexer per se. Access Innovations has been around since 1978, which in this world of information is nearly as old as dirt. But we are one of the 100 companies that matter, according to KM World's 2005 listing. And the services that we provide cover that range. We're into database design and management, taxonomies and indexing, and we also provide and markup and so on and so on. You can read better than I can twist my neck. And the software that we provide now is actually what we have used for years and years internally, and so it is production-driven. It is proven because that's what I use every day to do the work that I do. And just to sort out the vocabulary here, Access Innovations is the company, Data Harmony is the software, and News Indexer is one specific application of the Data Harmony software. But the whole goal of Access Innovations is to be able to store information, your information, in an effective, efficient way so that you can retrieve it well. We say we make search work, and what that means is we provide the foundation, organizing your information, helping you to organize your information so that the search engines can work more effectively. So, the focus of Access Innovations is access to information for effective storage and retrieval. We use taxonomies all the time. It is the way we work for organizing topics in a domain. Because taxonomies enable you to control your vocabulary and sort out all the vagaries of language, we apply metadata. We generally deal with databases where there are fields, but it's not crucial. So the metadata that we tend to focus on tends to be subject metadata, where we apply the vocabularies, the taxonomies, and then additional metadata depending on the project that we're talking about. And the categorization is all rules-based. And over the years, we've learned some lessons. And that is that there are long and well-established principles that really are worth still paying attention to. One is that to retrieve information by topic, use controlled vocabularies, and ideally thesauri. If you appreciate the differences between controlled vocabulary, taxonomy, thesauri, thesauri clearly have more information to offer and to enhance search and retrieval. An additional lesson is that to retrieve documents by any other features, you need to structure the content using some logical breakdowns. And there are ways to do that, and some of the breakdowns could be document type or delivery channel or author or date or, you know, geographic location or whatever. And we can capture that through fields, or now faceted taxonomy provides a slightly different approach to get to the same place. We rely heavily on the standards for taxonomy construction, Z3R19 and the newest revision, 2005. And we, like Teresa, still believe that humans are really important in this process. If you want to get the best taxonomy arrangement and precision indexing, don't count out humans. A little bit about the construction strategy for taxonomies that we use. It is a human process. We start by interviewing, go on to establish the scope, separate out primary and peripheral areas, and then step back and decide, do we need to construct this from the beginning, or is there something that we can adapt? Now, I should say that most of the taxonomy work that we do is individual customer driven. It is specific for one domain or another. So somebody will come up and say, I need something about not just environment, but environmental regulations. Or I need something about radiologic technology. Or I need something about employee benefits. And so each of the taxonomies that we tend to create is typically very customized for a narrow subject area. Narrow as the primary area, and you know there are always little edges off the areas that are the peripheral subject areas. So having realized that we may have to go on and customize this entirely, build from scratch, we do so, start by creating a conceptual skeleton after consulting with the client and their specific needs, build from the bottom up based on their content, build from the top down, using an authoritative approach. Generally, it's a hybrid of those two directions. And then expand to include the detail that's needed. Identify synonyms, all the duplications. Clarify words that are written the same but have different meanings, that is homographs. Link related terms. This is all basic thesaurus construction work. And finally, fill in the gaps. And in the end, test, edit, test, implement, maintain. Testing and maintaining go on off the chart there because thesauri are dynamic. They never stop. We do rely on humans, again, to develop the conceptual work for the taxonomy construction. We find that an automatic taxonomy generation approach is good for producing a list of suggested terms, candidate terms, but it still needs an awful lot of human review and analysis to figure out where are the connections, the overlaps, and so on. Having a taxonomy, when we go on to consider the indexing strategy that we use at Access Innovations, and it tends to be a combination of human knowledge and analysis, where we can really plow into recognizing the specificity, the precision, the exhaustivity of indexing terms that would be needed for particular content. And we complement that with a machine-assisted system to bring in efficiency of speed, tends to increase the speed by 4, quadruple speed, and increases consistency. You're probably aware of indexer drift. It happens to the best of us. It would happen to me when I go back to work tomorrow if I didn't have a machine system to help me out. Breadth and specificity are also enhanced by using a machine aid. And underlying it all, let me make sure that we're having no. Underlying it all, we've got rules as well. In our system, the rules are not pre-created to cover the entire batch. There are rules that are generated for every taxonomy term, meaning that rule, being able to categorize by that rule, is immediately available. We can also enhance those rules, and those rules are immediately available. We do not have to take the time to collect training sets or other strategies that you may have to use that may slow you down. Essentially, rules are available for categorization immediately. I am going to stop and take a drink. Let you read that so I don't have to read it. You folks are clear on taxonomies and metadata. So this is really just reestablishing the basics. What taxonomies are describes what the subject matter is all about. Metadata gives you a handle to put that subject metadata onto a document and then retrieve it. So why do we use taxonomies? It's really a matter of organizing, bringing order to chaos, and to provide a navigable, that is easy to browse around, hierarchical structure. Additionally, to provide vocabulary control, to link synonyms so that you're not stumbling across 3, 4 or more different expressions that really mean the same thing, to disambiguate homographs that are written the same but have different meanings, and you don't need to guess the particular writer's word. Writers come up with an infinite list of ways of expressing the same concept. It's hard to get into their minds. It's essentially, you say tomato and I say tomato. Taxonomies also provide, really I should say thesaurus here, provides additional information through those enriched relationships. And those are really there to provide a wealth of more and useful information. Suggested topic terms are provided through the thesaurus relationships, and those relationships really provide you a context for understanding what is the meaning that we're talking about right now. So, taxonomies provide for precision. They are the basis for storage and retrieval, and they provide for metadata that come up in search. So the value of taxonomy terms as metadata come into the retrieval phase by enabling precision. They're searchable as metadata. They give you more precise results than a full text search for a known topic, and they prevent random hits, that is, noise or false drops, and ultimately increase your productivity and make it a much more pleasant experience for the user. When you have taxonomy descriptors as subject metadata, they get selected and XML tagged, attached to a document. They are there with the document forever, essentially, unless you actively change them. There is no sort of shifting sands from day to day with a clustering or statistical results that may make one item drop off the list. If you happen to go back and you're looking for a particular known item that you ran into yesterday, depending on what else may have been coming in, that document may have sort of fallen off the list because it didn't really meet the threshold for a statistical collector anymore. With taxonomies applying metadata in a permanent, persistent way, you know you're going to be able to find what you saw yesterday. The descriptors are available whether we're talking about a database or a web page, and an XML tagged metadata tag is portable then. It isn't stuck with one software application. Okay. You've all heard the avalanche, the haystack, da, da, da. We all have this problem. But I imagine that for the news industry, there are some particular challenges. For current news, you've got a whole bunch coming in a hurry, and yet it gets old in a hurry as well. That's yesterday's news. There's a lot of specificity by region, and we know that there's a vocabulary that we're using today, and yet it's not what they were using 10 years ago. When you mention the word Enron right now, that brings to mind a certain set of concepts. If you raised that word 10 years ago, a whole different set of concepts. And so the tagging, the indexing that would go along with that, certain elements would stay the same, certain ones would evolve to add more concepts. Archived content, it seems to me, you've got a huge, huge volume. Again, it's region-specific, and the vocabulary, as I suggested, has changed over years. Your needs, I mean, your news indexer needs, also must differ according to whether we're talking about internal searchers or external searchers, the public users. So the internal searchers need to retrieve specific items. You know, I wrote this a month ago. I need to find the details that I put in there. They need to be able to plow around for general background information for something that they're creating. And they have no time to do all of this, so it needs to be quick and precise. An external user might be browsing around to explore general ideas, might want to recover something. I've done this with NPR. Too bad the NPR guy isn't here. Something I heard a year ago, literally. Maybe, maybe not be able to find it. And all right. All right. We'll try. And an external user is usually going to walk away with that satisfied kind of feeling, combination of satisfaction and, this is good enough, it'll suffice. But that might not be good enough for that internal user. And the other complication in the news industry is that there is no real standard accepted terminology. Within an industry, for example, you know what you're going to talk about, what you mean when we're all talking about a certain kind of semiconductor. But again, news writers are all over the board using a variety of language. So, let's consider best practices for information architecture. The bottom line is, IAs say, give them lots of different ways to retrieve information. That's the best practice rolled in a nutshell. So, how do taxonomies support better search? They provide an organized and browsable category and stable metadata with persistent categorization. They help you target your search with priority on those metadata, and they provide the ability for enhanced term or concept information through those thesaural relationships. They make it so that you don't have to plug in a taxonomy term in order to be able to get the content indexed with that term. There are ways around it. And faceted taxonomies become sort of a way of providing fielded or structured data as in a database. There is value to a browsable taxonomy. A study that was done, I believe, in the Microsoft User Lab showed that searchers were able to find their information 50% faster when they had browsable categories, and it was especially the case when the information that they were looking for was beyond that top 20 returns. And they had a better time doing it. So a browsable taxonomy view provides a direct route to access topics. And within our software, we've actually added an additional component or module called NavTree that's part of the underlying software that also leads to News Indexer. And I'll show you that. Here it is. It is very similar, really, to what Teresa was showing, where you have taxonomy terms, and you can hone down on the area that you want to get to, say here in biology, see how many documents are attached at each term, and select and you get your document. This happens to be from an educational media database. As I said, we're all over the board in terms of customers, not just news. But this is one way of applying a taxonomy or thesaurus for a usable end-user search tool. So, taxonomy terms also serve as the metadata that facilitates full-text search. Here is the second of those IA practices. So imagine you're looking for germs, but actually the term is microbes, or you're looking for something about vaccinations, whatever, and it really should go to pharmaceutical drugs. The taxonomy underlying the system can make that connection for you and retrieve the exact results by searching metadata first to see what is the most precise content, and then full text. So recognizing those term equivalents is an added feature. On the SLA website, we've got that going on. SLA's website is built on the use of our software. So if you were to do a search on that site and do search on the word competencies, it would recognize that what you mean is professional competencies. And there is the background SLA taxonomy that we developed, and it's held in the software. So it's making that connection for you and then retrieves all of the documents in that category, whether it said that word or not. Another kind of search, again using the SLA vocabulary and site to demonstrate, searching on the word taxonomy is rather interesting because the results bring up 27 documents that have taxonomy as the subject metadata because it was manually, with assistance of the machine-aided system, tag, even though those documents don't say anything necessarily about the word taxonomy in the document. With a full text search, all you got was one. So being able to apply the taxonomy terms as metadata increases your retrieval. The third aspect of the best practices in information architecture brings in the possibility of query expansion. So this is a matter of saying, well, okay, you're searching for bug. Do you mean insects or microbes or bugs in software applications? You're able to see the results in each category and then say, I mean this one. And another add-on module to our software called MAI Query enables that kind of focusing in on the particular subject area that you meant, where this word, for example, bug, may have occurred. So again, this is a matter of leveraging your categorization rules to improve the search results. We all do it. We love it. It's best when there is nothing else for us. Terrific when there are new words that you have to search. When it's a matter of vernacular, again, we were talking about variations among regional forms of language and expressions and so on. When you have to search for a particular name that really hasn't hit the news yet, hasn't been included in any taxonomy, and it really is a de facto standard. I mean, we all do it, and that's the kind of search that we sort of expect to be able to find. And again, it's good if satisficing is good enough for you. It's good when you have nothing else. But if you really need to hone in on a precision retrieval, then you need something a little bit more. And I predict that as searchers are finding different kinds of approaches on different sites that provide a better result for them, then they're going to get increasingly demanding. And a simple Google type search, free text search, is not really going to do the job for them anymore. So, in the end, we'd like to say use information in the taxonomy and the indexing rules to support search, because the thesaurus relationships will allow you to expand the searcher's awareness. You've seen that on ask.com, perhaps. It's a really cool sort of revived site. where it gives you the information in broader and narrower terms, in related concepts, in synonyms. And then to be able to categorize using rules that capture an indexer's analysis, not simply relying on a statistical approach of something may occur with something else, but truly understanding the words from a human's interpretive ability. Wrong button. Very good. So let me give you just a little bit about NewsIndexer in particular. As I said, it is one implementation of our software. The software is available for whatever kind of implementation you choose. But this one happens to be designed around news. And it is used with your information content. We are not a content service or a news aggregator. At the core of NewsIndexer, there is a taxonomy of about 5,000 terms, growing as needed, about 34,000 geographic terms based on postal codes in 137 countries, optional organization terms, 1 million. And the main point here is that the vocabulary is flexible and customizable by us, by you, either way. The other part of NewsIndexer's core is the rule base for using those taxonomies to categorize the content. It suggests terms to you as the final decider. It is transparent. It's not a black box. You can modify the rules simply by opening and taking 5 seconds to key in a change. That increases the precision for every document henceforth. It's not a matter of collecting 50 documents that represent the new twist on a concept, but modifying the rules to bring up that concept immediately. Here is just a quick peek. This is the way Thesaurus Master looks. There is, in this case, the hierarchy view of the taxonomy on the left, the term record on the right. There are a number of other ways to look at the taxonomy file, but that's the hierarchy default. And this is a real quick introduction to the rules. These are generated automatically for every term that you add or import into the Thesaurus Master. So this is shrubs. We've got a listing of natural science. It goes down to botany, trees, and shrubs. So it says text to match. Whenever I see shrubs in a document, I'm going to suggest that you use the term shrubs. Not too difficult. However, a synonym for shrubs is bush or bushes, singular plural equivalent. Now I have to say, now wait, there is another way to interpret that word bush. And so I add in just a couple of lines to disambiguate the word bush or bushes now. And again, that's something that takes 10 seconds. The vocabulary for NewsIndexer is geared, customized to the news industry. We've kind of built it around the sections of the newspaper. It's easily customized, adding or importing terms. There are no limits on size, hierarchy levels, relationships, and so on. And it's viewable in a number of different formats and stored in XML. What it's not is a static vocabulary. It's not opaque. For the internal user, you can get into the system at any time, make any changes in the terms or the rules, all for the sake of enhancing precision. So how does it work? Scans the article. It identifies words that trigger a rule. Remember, we saw at the beginning of the other slide a couple ago, it said text to match shrubs or text to... Those would be the words in the document. So it finds that word, it triggers opening the rule, and suggesting a term either straight out without any ifs, ands, or buts, or by following the conditions set in the rule. It can be set in either an editor review mode where an editor is given a list of suggested terms, or in an automatic mode where you might say, okay, I want the top 6 terms that occur on this list regardless. I don't want to have to look. I've got too much work. You can go to the NewsIndexer site, and this is what you'll see. This is not really the way it would work in the background, but it really does show you the function. I've simply copy and pasted a little piece of text from the Baltimore Sun. This one happens to be about military personnel in employment issues. So I pasted that in, and on the next page, I get a list of suggested terms. Again, it's up to the editor to decide which terms would be appropriate, which ones will be left behind. And the system remembers those classes, the hits and the misses and the noise, to provide the basis to improve the rule base. On the background, this is what I would see, but it's the same information. Here's the list of suggested terms. I say I want those. And those are the ones that get permanently saved as subject metadata with this document. The results in the end, you get content that's categorized accurately and quickly and consistently and permanently. You may wonder about IPTC codes. Anybody using those? All right. This is the International Press Telecommunications Council. It's kind of working with NewsML. And IPTC in the subject area provides about 1,300 codes that are really heavily sports-oriented. And I understand it's because they're primarily or originally focused on photos, and there are a lot of sports photos. But the bottom line is that it's all for being able to repurpose the content. And again, that's a matter of being able to tag these items with XML. And it's in use by 55 organizations. Now, it also works with News Indexer. It's compatible with our taxonomy and rules. The News Indexer taxonomy is about 4 times richer and more spread across all of the subject areas without quite such of a focus on sports. And the system would work the same. So it is the same rules in News Indexer's rule base currently that would be adapted to suggest, in addition, IPTC codes if they are needed. Really quickly, News Indexer is available on an ASP model where you access the underlying software, do your indexing, send it to us, and we modify the rule base so that it's immediately better for you the next time you see it. This is an overnight process, and everybody has to have one of these things. Client sees the terms from the taxonomy term and rule base, indexes the articles, sends them to us. We fix up the rules, add terms that they need, and that feedback loop creates for a constant precision situation. Or it can be arranged where you own the software, you own the vocabulary, you own the rule base, you do all the updating on your own. So, just quick recap about News Indexer. It is taxonomy-based. It is governed by rules that lead to the suggestion or the automatic application of terms. It can go in an editor review mode or automatic. Those terms get plugged onto the documents, the content, as permanent metadata. And we just talked about ASP, or client-owned. It uses our software underneath, which is totally flexible, totally customizable for you, easy, user-friendly interface with no limits. Closing. I'm reminded this is all about taxonomy. So what I want you to go away with remembering about taxonomies is that it really does, the taxonomy provides the foundation of your content organization. If you're developing a taxonomy on your own, think about how and where it will be applied in the workflow. Plan for the fact that it's going to grow. And plan for the fact that you're going to need people to sort it out, to organize it, and finally apply it. Don't let all of that stop you from creating one if you decide that you need to. Just start somewhere, start small, but get going and follow the standards of Z3919. And if you don't want to build your own, then there are some out there. Go borrow, buy, license, do whatever. But get going with it and customize as needed. And I thank you.
Before I start seeing is how I'm the last presentation. Does everybody need to shift a little bit? I've been watching you guys kind of fidgeting. Does anybody need to stand up and stretch or anything? Five slides, I promise. That's it to go through. My name is Teresa Harrison. I'm with Factiva, as you see on the screen here. And, of course, I'll be talking about what Factiva is doing with their taxonomy as well. And what are we doing with it, and where is it going? However, before we answer that question, though, I think we need to first address this rather controversial question on the screen, and that is, do we really need a taxonomy? It's time-consuming. It's never-ending. People rarely use it, and when they do, they complain about gaps or mistakes in the data. Very frustrating. It's a thankless job. I hear people laughing, so you understand. And if search engines are really becoming so exquisite, do we really need a taxonomy? So I'll leave you with those questions. I'm already hearing an answer, but leave you with that. Okay, so what I'm going to do is walk you through a little bit about what Factiva is doing with their taxonomy. And I'll take you through some current vital statistics of our very time-consuming taxonomy right now. 330,000 company codes, 658 subject codes, 880 industry codes, 357 region codes. Very time consuming, let me repeat that. All consuming, very comprehensive as well. I highlight this because it brings up what we think are the three critical elements to a successful taxonomy. The first element being a very structured set of terms that apply to the content set that you're working with. So you need to have the foundation, you need to have the structure that you're working with. Once you have that, it enables your users to start to analyze the content and spend less time looking for that content because they're using the structure applied to the content that you're looking for. The second part of an effective taxonomy is an effective search engine. And it's not just a search engine, any old search engine out there. It's a search engine that combines searching free text terms with index terms. And the third element of an effective taxonomy is a flexible and intuitive user interface, something that exposes the indexing, something that gives users tools to really focus in on terms that they're looking for, and finally, an interface that people want to use. So those are the three elements that we work with. In looking at this screenshot here, one of the things that we've noticed, and we all have noticed this, is that recently we've seen some very interesting developments in search engines overall. Clustering of keywords and themes, statistical and linguistic analysis, and on-the-fly discovery. And surely this is good enough, and you wouldn't need to combine a taxonomy if we have all of these advances in search engines. And actually, combining the search engine with the taxonomy fit very well together. Clustering can present new ideas to users and help them find new terms to search with. It also presents new terms to the taxonomist to add to your structured list. Clustering on its own, though, can be a little chaotic. And so when you combine it with the taxonomy, you start to add order to that structure, very much what Alice was just speaking about. Looking at this particular screen, we've conducted a search on taxonomy. This is Factiva's new Search 2.0 interface. We've conducted a search on taxonomy, and what we've noticed here is we've come up with a cluster term, Jane Austen. Rather interesting, and you'll see in the headlines that it was actually a book written called The Taxonomy of Barnacles, and obviously the author was very inspired by Jane Austen. So our clustered results here came up with some rather surprising terms in the fact of Jane Austen. You'll also notice in that clustering, though, it's come up with SharePoint portal server. So it's come up with some relevant results. So the clustering, surprising results. However, combining that with the taxonomy, we direct users to the word knowledge management, the term knowledge management. And all of a sudden now what we're doing is not only are we giving users new terms to search from, but through the taxonomy that's been applied to the content, how it's been driven out through the search engine, we're directing users to the term knowledge management, which is associated with taxonomy articles. It narrows your search, but it also broadens your search to help you find articles about metadata, a term you may not have thought about when you were initially conducting your search. Going on to our next screen here, We talked a little bit about what Factiva has been doing with their taxonomy, the amount of terms that are available there. I just wanted to spend 2 quick minutes on what we are doing with the taxonomy going forward. So currently, in a product that Factiva has called Factiva Company and Executives and Sales Works, you can pull up a list of companies based on specific coding. So in this instance, we're looking at our industry coding of print and publishing and online news and business companies. And what we want to do, it's great to pull up this list, and just by using the code, you're narrowing things down. So from an end user perspective, you think this is great. Now I've already focused. Well, we all know that's good, but from Factiva's standpoint, we want to help the user focus even more. And so now what we're interested here is we're interested in finding out about new products and services that pertain specifically to publishing and online companies. So what will be coming out in the summer of 06 is being able to take this list and start to narrow it down based on additional subject terms and additional key terms. So we've taken our publishing list. We want to know about new products and services. So we've come up with a very targeted list. All of these companies listed here have some mention or some news about new products and services. We highlight a company out of the list. In this case, we're picking the New York Times. And when we click on the New York Times, now what we're looking at is the actual article about the New York Times and about new products and services. The idea here is we're really making the metadata work very hard. We're really extracting the value out of those 330,000 company terms and 888 industries and so on and so forth that we have. We've built this list. We now want to continue maintaining it and then, of course, adding more value to the work that we've already put into it. I'm going to leave you with some closing thoughts and questions to ponder for the rest of the session and the rest of the conference. We all know there are still lots of questions to be answered in this field at the moment. The first is around community tagging, collaboration, folksonomies. And there is great loyalty and satisfaction when users have a chance to directly give input into applications that they're using, when they can suggest feedback, when they can suggest a term, when they can add folksonomy terms, and when they can make corrections wiki style. This can be a very effective editorial tool, but it can also cause some anarchy out there. So the question still looms, is this something we want people doing or not? I'll leave that up to you to answer. The next thought I'll leave you with are best practices for indexing around taxonomies. What was may not always be. So this is something that you have to keep checking back to. And here's what Factiva does. We manage and maintain the taxonomy in the fact that we take feedback and we do quarterly reviews of our entire taxonomy. We take the feedback not only from our clients, but from our editorial staff as well. And then before we actually implement the changes, we publish a list of what those changes are going to be so people are aware of that before we actually put it into the product. We then apply the new codes to the content that we'll be looking at. And we apply this both through routine and ad hoc quality management procedures. We also work with our vendors to make sure that there's collaboration on the terms that we're adding. And through working with the vendors, one of the things that we're able to do is discover new ways to utilize our taxonomy. So one of the new things that has come up, a new opportunity, is to being able to scan clusters of terms, which we're seeing through the search engine, scan clusters for new terms to be added to the taxonomy. So that's a little bit about best practices. Metadata standards. Slavishly follow or completely disregard? Questions up to you. What we would suggest is keep an eye on them and adopt rather than reinvent. It may pay off one day to have the same fits, and if nothing else, it will likely save you some work in the short term. Hopefully the long term as well, but definitely the short term. Additionally, as Alice has mentioned, take a close look at IPTC, International Press Telecommunications Council. On this site as well is the Information Technology for News Initiative. And again, that will give you some other standards that are coming out. Resources, an area to look at is a taxonomy warehouse. It is becoming very acceptable these days, I'm sure you're all aware of this, to purchase a taxonomy, borrow a taxonomy, license a taxonomy that's already existed, instead of having to reinvent it from scratch and start from point zero and work forward. This site is actually a great reference tool, and its attempt is to gather taxonomies from around the world and centralize them so that you can use them as a reference tool. It also includes useful related information about events, white papers, and other information about standards. And the final thing I'll leave you with, the answer to the question, do we really need taxonomies? Again, you'll have your own answer. Factiva's answer to that is taxonomies are very powerful for steering users to the right content set and towards the discovery of information that was previously unknown. The more metadata applied to the content set and the more options there are for pinpointing information and discovering the right answers. The more synonyms and aliases listed, the greater the ambient findability, not just ability to find an article, but to find key pieces of knowledge within the article. Thank you.
All right, any specific questions from the audience?
Yes.
One question I've had, and it may have changed since I've asked about that but it feels like one thing I love about your current interface is your very great point about exposing the technology, like the index and how able to browse it. But data 2.0, it feels like some of that exposure to the index is not quite as obvious. You've gone with a more single search term approach.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
Okay. Okay, so Search 2.0, the screen that we put up there, I'm going to back up for just one second. When Factiva comes out with new products, before we actually come out with a product, we spend an inordinate amount of time with end users all over the place understanding how you use the product, what information successes you're having, what obstacles you're running into with our product, what other products you're using in the marketplace, how you're using the internet. We do all of that primary research, and we take that, we analyze that, and we build that into our products. We're also looking at the trends in the marketplace. So I give you that bit of background to talk about Search 2.0. When you log into Search 2.0, you see a very simple, sleek interface. It's very Google-ish looking, if you will. And the reason it is the fact that we understand that not people in this room, so I'm not going to exclude you, but for 30 seconds I'm going to exclude you. The majority of the people out there want to do a Google type of search. They want to be able to put in one or two keywords and just get back some results and go from there. So we've taken that concept and we have drawn that into the Factiva product, but instead of having to do a Google search and search the internet, you're searching our 10,000 sources. That said, the interface is very simple to use, and you're right, a lot of the indexing is not prevalent when you get the search results. You do get the news clustering, and the top five trends that appear in companies, subjects, industries, and sources, those are pulled from the indexing. But from an end user standpoint, as I mentioned earlier, they don't want to have to be drilling through lists to find things. So we're trying to find a happy medium between satisfying the end user and the general end user and getting them quality information that they need, yet drawing on our taxonomy to pinpoint and start to do some data mining with them on the taxonomy, through the taxonomy for their information. That said, from an information professional standpoint, that interface is still very powerful to use, and the reason being is it does really help you discover things that you may not have thought to search on the first go around. So the taxonomy is still there, it's just not as prevalent as you've mentioned. The existing interface is not going away, so you can still click the link factiva.com and you can still go to the existing interface and still drill down. We're really working to accommodate two different marketplaces and the users that are using the products. But again, in Search 2.0, we're really leveraging the work that we've put into the taxonomy to help people start to discover what they don't know, to start to do some data mining and drill down into content.
Really,
and Yeah, and most information professionals do. Again, the old interface is not going away. We will continue to make enhancements to that. We will continue to grow that product as we continue to grow the new interface as well. There's definitely room in the marketplace for both interfaces.
You're welcome. Sure. I have a question. Have you thought about, or is it possible to apply this kind of technology to image databases where there's really a paucity of textual information, except possibly for the IPTC headers? And the other part of that question would be, some news organizations are creating very large-scale databases from digitized microfilm, and is there an application there for that huge quantity of data, which is truly historical?
From the LexisNexis perspective, for images, for like right now, as I showed you, the way the rules are written, it is text-based processing. So unless it could run across a caption or something like that, there really isn't any method of translating what we have now to be an image indexer. As I mentioned, we have a new technologies R&D department at LexisNexis, and that's kind of their realm right now, is kind of looking into either taking what we have and manipulating it or looking at new tools, and I think it would have to be completely new tools to do image indexing. The second one, which is on the digital archive, as I mentioned, we re-index the news archive on a regular basis because the automated categorization is so fast. So as you start digitizing more information, it's extremely efficient for the process that we've created, which is a Java API, to go back and run rules on historical data. I think there the trick would be we'd probably need to add new terms and review some of those rule sets to make sure that the language, we have the language going back that far. The content on LexisNexis goes back to like the late 1960s, and so we do test across all of the content that we have. If you're talking about going back into the 19th century, obviously the rule sets will need to be updated to accommodate that language. But efficiency-wise, processing-wise, I think that's a perfect example of how we can take advantage of rule-based classification to extend into your archives.
Can I just add to that? Factiva currently does index images. We take the photo streams from Reuters and Knight Ridder. We take their entire stream. And all of those photographs are indexed to the caption of that photograph, whether it ran with an article or a story or not. Something that we are looking into, I'm sure all companies are looking into, is indexing audio, video, et cetera. That will be forthcoming down the road. As far as microfiche and historical data, it's something that's very possible. It's a matter of actually sitting down and putting the project together.
I would agree with much of what Teresa has said as far as imaging text. With our software, it really is based on textual data, and as long as there is a caption of some sort for an image, that's enough to work on. And as far as the, handling digital archives, when you're relying on automatic categorization, you are giving up a certain amount of precision because you simply understandably don't have the time or resources to go back and check each return and categorization result. It may be that you'd have to look at the results that you get through a sample set and maybe sampling across decades as vocabulary changes to modify some terminology or some keywords that may pop up and prompt the categorization rule. But at some point, you have to rely on automation to deal with a huge legacy file and accept that there will be a little bit of fudge factor there and the precision drops some.
Back to my. I'd like to add to the microfilm digitization is that's such a huge pool of data. And if there were a way to successfully subset it in the packages, mm-hmm. that has high commercial value.
Mm-hmm. Subset it like events.
Right. Heaven help me. Columbus, Ohio. if I put OSU football on anything, I
can make money. Buy the newspaper. Okay, yeah. I see grape in right there.
Any other questions? I had a couple of questions that I wrote down. Listening to all of you talking about how much work this is
as required by all of your companies. I'm just interested in how many people you have doing this type of work. Starting on this
All right. Again, it's a kind of the team is in both the U.S. and in our European offices. And if you count everyone who does the news and business and the legal indexing, and you can see me counting in my head right now, I want to say that it's probably about 50 people. If you look at the indexers and the product managers and consultants managers kind of all together, and again for legal and news and business. So it's a big resource. Sorry.
I'm in an odd position because our arrangement is a very different one from Factiva and LexisNexis. We have people as needed to develop taxonomies and to develop the rule bases. And so for the news process, for example, things are going along quite well at the moment. We manage to keep up with the vocabulary and the rules with one or two people spending a few hours a week.
And from Factiva's perspective, if we look overall between our consulting team, our editors, directors, so on and so forth, we're probably looking at a team of 50 people for our, the business side, since that's what Factiva provides, just business.
And another thing that you mentioned, Alice specifically, a lot of these guys do some manual keywording of the data before they send it to us, for example. I'm just wondering, with indexing, whether you're using NewsIndexer or Lexis or Factiva, do you take advantage of the subject indexing that's been applied by publishers? Or how does that work in terms of how you're tagging data?
That would certainly be the case, that you know, if you get feedback that comes in with keyword or user-suggested terms, you'd certainly consider whether it's essentially a synonym to a term that's already in your taxonomy or needs to be added. It actually goes into the area of folksonomies and social tagging that Teresa had kind of raised, that becomes a terrific source of additional concepts that need to be considered still within the constraints of having a controlled vocabulary to avoid the anarchy that you suggested.
And I would add to that, yeah, same concept, which is we use publisher-provided indexing to help our rules. So when our rules read against a document, it reads publisher indexing and uses that as evidence to tag for LexisNexis smart indexing term. Also, when we put documents online, we maintain both the smart indexing that we've added and the original publisher indexing. So a user can see both and can choose to search on whichever they're more familiar with.
And Factiva also retains the publisher indexing, and then as we run the articles through our source processing system, we also apply our own entire set of Factiva intelligent indexing to the articles as well. So when the articles come out the other side, if you will, they are fully coded with the publisher's information as well as Factiva's.
And my last question is sort of two-tier. One is the classic indexing question of precision and recall, and how you all measure that. And the second is you all mentioned that you index for entities, geographic areas, companies, as well as topics. And would like to hear from you what some of the challenges with those two are. For example, with a story that's out of the Baltimore Sun, but perhaps it's about something that's happening in Washington, D.C., how do you make sure that you're actually tagging that story correctly for a geographic entity?
Mm-hmm. So. You want me to start?
Sure.
Okay, so the first part was recall and precision.
Yeah.
As the indexers are creating their rules, they, as I said, they put the terms through a battery of tests, and so they have thresholds of recall and precision in those tools that they're testing and that they're working toward before a rule set can be released to production. And then after a term has been in production, kind of on a regular basis for a new term, I want to say it's like after a month in production, 3 months, 6 months, and then it goes into kind of the standard maintenance pool, we'll test it again, actually look at the documents that have been indexed and see whether or not we need to go back and tweak the rule set. So kind of it's, again, that iterative testing both before a term is in production and after the rule's in production. And then the second part of the question was?
Entity indexing versus.
And that's a tricky one, the whole idea of aboutness, especially for geographical topics. And we measure aboutness by the language in the document, the language in the text. So we don't necessarily look at where it was published, Baltimore Sun or New York Times, but what language is in the document, because there is for the publications, we break publications down. So when you're doing your source selection, you can choose publications by region, but actually the indexing itself is what's discussed in the document. So if it's a Baltimore Sun article about Iraq, it's going to be indexed for Iraq and not for Baltimore. But you could get to the all Baltimore, all, what do you call this,
Maryland.
Chesapeake Bay,
yeah.
Maryland? Well, thanks, Maryland. U.S. publications through the source selection. So we kind of give you the option to do both, but the indexing is, again, document aboutness.
Okay. Question one was the precision recall. Remember, again, that we don't bring to the table any content. We are about, excuse me, handling your content. And so the way the news indexer system works is that we provide you taxonomy, provide you the rules. You say, yeah, I like these terms for indexing, you know, our local articles that have run. You send us back that information. The system has a way of, has a statistics module in order to maintain files of hits, misses, and noise. And by looking at the numbers that are generated in those hits, misses, and noise column for each term, we're directed to the rules to go back to tweak, to fine-tune, to make the accuracy better so that the noise goes down, the misses go down, the hits go up. On the second question where you were asking about the local source of a document as opposed to references within that article to other geographic locations, again, within our rule base, we have a method of establishing that a certain feed is from a particular newspaper, in which case a reference to a word might have a very different meaning from that word's reference or concept for a different location. For example, hornets. Hornet, are we talking sort of bees, wasp, hornets? Well, not if you're in North Carolina or wherever they have a local sports team that are hornets. Sports teams are notorious for this kind of thing. Where you really have to be able to identify that this is a particular newspaper. This word in this context has a very, very different meaning from a broader interpretation, broader national newspaper perspective.
As far as precision and recall go from Factiva's perspective, we have a certain percentage that we look for on a regular basis, and our percentage is in the high 90s for both precision and recall. And we look for that based on very much what has been mentioned before, the number of accurate hits, the number of missed hits, the number of noise that's coming through. And we refine our rules, as well as our humans, if you will, to make sure that we're hitting that number on a regular basis, and we are constantly looking at that. As far as common terms, again, this is a rules-based issue as with machines as well as with humans. You know, any indexing that's done, or I should say within Factiva's world, the indexing that's done, it's not solely automated and it's not solely human-based. Machines are incredibly fast. Humans are incredibly intelligent. And what we do is combine the two to make sure that the rules start to become more refined within the machines and the auto-indexing, so that when you get something like coach, you may be looking for coach handbags instead of the coach of the team, or when you get something like Orange Mobile Phone Company instead of orange that you eat. It's really refining those codes and the rules that come out of the machines, and it's making sure that our editors around the world are working with the machines, working with the tools to set those rules in place, and that keeps our precision and recall up in the high 90s.
Great, thanks. Any other questions?
Just out of curiosity, most of what you do is the major advantages. Your ability to capture labs and Are you doing anything to create free-based teasers? Are you at all concerned about the directions of Google News or News Now, where it looks like some people are going to be able to shortcut some of your capturing common news and automating the historical databasing of that? Maybe not as precise as what you're doing, but are you doing any teasers for proof information that might be free from which you can stack advertising fees?
From a Factiva perspective, advertising is something, for the 12 years that I have been here, it is something that we bring up, not regularly, but comes up on a frequent enough basis. And, you know, do we put advertising in the product? And we inevitably come back to the answer of no, because people pay for the information that they access on Factiva. That said, with the trends in the marketplace, you can see that very much in our Search 2.0 product, our brand new search interface that's out. And it really is the overall marketplace that the technology that's coming out of the marketplace that's driving those trends. Factiva is embracing that and driving that within our existing products, within the 10,000 quality sources. So again, if you have very limited time, you want to go and do a search and get your precision information, you can do that through Factiva. Google, Fast, Yahoo, those companies will continue to push the marketplace, and obviously we encourage that. We also embrace that and bring that into our products. From a free perspective, I don't see it right now, but you never know.
Because the only people who know about you are people who are into commercial products.
True. That's true. But again, the marketplace, as you well know, the marketplace is so large out there that there are people who will never use commercial products. And there are people who will very rarely use free products. They'll use free products if they absolutely have to. So, you know, we're working within that realm.
I would say that for News Indexer, it's not the kind of area that we would get into. We are the background indexer for somebody else's content. But as a plug for using thesaural information, that really is, again, another way where you can implement the information that's part of thesaurus terms by saying related, this is exactly what's going on ask.com, if I interpret your question correctly. That's precisely what they're using. And, you know, to enable that, to support that function by pulling in the thesaurus information, that's something that News Indexer and the Data Harmony software underlying your content and search and retrieval would enable.
And from LexisNexis perspective, I kind of agree with Teresa on that we're not necessarily giving away any information for free, but we do have products. We have a product called LexisNexis Publisher that allows customers to take feeds from LexisNexis and put them on their either their intranet or their extranet as sort of free blurbs of information. So we don't necessarily give the information away free, but we make it possible for users to who have purchased the information to republish it on their sites. And it often has been branded, like, you know, from LexisNexis. So that's kind of how we let people take advantage of what we've got to build their own sort of free access to news blurbs or hot news.
Anything else? Okay, I'd like to again thank our panelists all for being here today, and sorry, thank you all for coming.
My name's Maureen. I work with Lee Baldwin at Blue Cross Blue Shield.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, I think we're probably going to end up having a chance to work together later this year.
Good to you. Well, let me give you my card so that you can remember me wherever on the
I should forget my card.
Oh, no, it's so funny. I've heard that, and I've heard so many people have, like,
run out of business cards.
Yeah,
at times.
Yeah.
I've heard your name so many times, so it's good.
Now you can see me when you're on the phone.
Yeah, I talk to Tom Abbott all the time.
Okay,
yeah. He's a great guy.
Good. Oh, yeah,